This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. Welcome to Crap of the Week.
Sweet, merciful crap!
That was the biggest load of crap I've ever heard!
From downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 85, Crap of the Week.
Yeah, this is a return of an old favorite. We haven't done this in a while, but Crap of the Week, this is where I talk about a movie that I've seen that you may not have, and you, of course, do the same, and we respond to each other.
And these, obviously, aren't necessarily crap.
I was gonna say that.
They invariably are, but they're the odd time where something slips through the cracks, and we track down some sort of, we unearth some sort of gem.
Yeah, I was going to say, these are not necessarily crap movies. Some of them are maybe good movies. However, the one that I'm going to talk about is sort of crap. I've been on this real extreme horror sort of kick, where I've been renting a lot of really extreme Italian horrors, a lot of Campbell movies, and I don't know. I go through phases, and my phase right now is, you know, the gorier the better. Now, one movie I've always heard of as being one of the biggest nasties was Anthropophagus. And this is directed by... this is too funny. Joe D'Amato, okay? Now, like every Italian director... that's a pseudonym. His real name is Aristide Massacesi. Forgive if I'm mispronouncing that. Now, the thing about Joe D'Amato is this guy directed almost 200 films, okay? Including a couple of the Black Emmanuel films. Emmanuel and the Last Cannibals, Emmanuel in America.
Yeah, I guess in case people don't know the Emmanuel series, why don't you explain them?
Well, I mean, it started off as like a softcore French movie starring Sylvia Christel as Emmanuel, and it was just basically, I think the director was called, a really cool name, Just Jacob or something like that. But then that character sort of took on a life of its own, sort of like Django and Spaghetti Westerns, where the original Django was Franco Nero.
Yes.
But then, since it was so popular, they just started making all these spaghetti westerns and putting different actors and just calling it Django this, Django that, yeah. Like Thomas Million,
yeah.
And like Die, Django, Die, and, you know, so yeah.
And so there's been lots of incarnations of Emmanuel.
Exactly, and, you know...
Gemser.
Laura Gemser, yeah.
Stunning Laura Gemser.
Yeah, I mean, so the Sylvia Christel was the original Emmanuel, but arguably the more famous Emmanuel is Laura Gemser, who they call Black Emmanuel.
Even though she's like Indonesian.
She's from, I think, exactly. Bali, so, you know, and...
Guess it's all relative.
The other thing, too, with Gemser's Emmanuels, is instead of being just these, like, you know, softcore pornography, coming-of-age sexual movies, they started becoming quite extreme. Like, you'd be investigating snuff films or cannibals or stuff, and a lot of times they're directed by Joe D'Amato.
Yeah.
This man also directed another really extreme movie that I watched as well, called Beyond the Darkness, a.k.a. Blue Omega. He directed another movie called Porno Holocaust, which is very interesting because... I said to you a moment ago that he made almost 200 films. 100 of those were hardcore porn films directed for the Italian video market.
Huh.
So he made a whole bunch of horror flicks, and he made a lot of porn. Another thing that's really hilarious about this guy is he is the man of a million... I mean, Lon Chaney is the man of a thousand faces,
yeah.
This is the man of a thousand pseudonyms, okay? Because Aristide Massacesi is only... I mean, Joe D'Amato is only one of... countless number of pseudonyms that this man used. I'm just going to read you five or six of them. George Hudson, Robert Price Jones, Robert Yip, Dan Slonisco, Clara Lee Sun.
Huh.
he's becoming an Asian Mormon.
Well, that's funny that he would even bother if the premise is that people are not going to be able to culturally relate to some crazy Italian name. Then how do you become like Giuseppe D'Amato? Like, why not go, well, I guess he does go Asian, he goes female, like, but Joe D'Amato is not altogether different from whatever the guy's actual name is. That's hilarious. That's
clear. And then another one I really like is Ralph De Palma. And those are just six out of like 100 on IMDb, also known as, and it just goes on for pages and pages and pages. Anyhow, Anthrophagus is a movie that came out in 1980, and it's, again, it's considered to be a real video nasty. It was on the video nasty list.
Yeah, that list of films, I guess the UK censorship board, they deemed too extreme to release to the general public, and this became a big to-do about, you know, affixing labels sort of like on these shores with the whole heavy metal and gangster rap, you know, parental guidance stickers they had on there.
And it's funny, too, because a lot of these movies that were once video nasties have now been declassified. They still have not been released in their fully uncut form in the UK. For example, The New York Ripper. It's not available domestically on Blu-ray. So I went to Suspect Video, and they actually had a UK import that was region-free of The New York Ripper. I'm like, great, I bought it, right? It was put out by Shameless. I put it in, I watched it, I'm like, where the fuck's the nipple slicing?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I went back, I said, this is cut!
The cut was cut.
Yeah, you know? Our good buddy Lewis just took it back. He said, "Man, that sucks." You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I recently went on a hunt to get Cannibal Holocaust because I really love that movie. I wanted to get the Grindhouse release three disc Blu-ray, which I ended up getting off eBay. It's going to be arriving any day now. Cost me a fortune. Shameless again put it out on the only existing UK print that they could put out, and it's missing one scene. And just one scene is enough to make me go crazy. I hate censorship. I hate when things are cut. But getting back to Anthrophagus, I mean,
well, the etymology of the term anthro, man, phagus, eating.
Exactly.
So it's a cannibal.
And this is a man, yeah, it's a cannibal movie. It's about a man who eats other people.
Yeah.
It's not a cannibal movie with, you know, natives and stuff. It's a man played by George Eastman, who's a prolific genre actor in Italy, who is basically, they don't really name him, I'm just going to call him the Anthrophagus. Another actress in this movie is Tissa Farrow, Mia's sister, who was also in Fulci's Zombie.
Interesting.
So, here we go. I'm watching Joe D'Amato's Anthrophagus, and I've heard so much about this movie over the years, and so I'm really excited to put it in. And I got to tell you, man, for the first 50 minutes, it bored my tits off, okay? I mean, like, honestly, like, it was, nothing happened. It was so fucking boring.
But I've argued, and we talked about this before, because I was more into cannibal films than you were, and you sort of eschewed them. And I've always maintained that's almost as integral to the genre, the stultifying boredom is as key to it as the penis lopping. It's just, it's a dull genre.
Okay, but again, this is a different sort of movie. There was no penis lopping in this movie, but the whole point of it almost reminded me of this really cool movie I saw once called Who Would Kill a Child, right? Where you have a group of tourists and they go to this Greek island, and the island is deserted. They're looking around going, where is everybody? Nobody's around, right? And there's about five of them, and they're wandering. You got Alan, you got Arnie, you got Maggie, Julie, that's just a pharaoh, and they're just wandering around. The only living soul they see is this weird woman who just is peeking out of a window, and they run up to the apartment, and they find her. They don't find her. What they see is "Go home" written on the walls, and then they, all of a sudden, this corpse just falls, and it looks like it's been gnawed on. As the movie continues, they come across this girl, Rita, and she just appears out of nowhere in this villa that they end up
taking refuge in. Yeah.
Exactly. And she just pops out from this barrel of blood, covered in blood, just indiscriminately hacking away with a knife, right? Well, it turns out that she is a blind girl who was supposed to be in the charge of Julie, and she escaped from this calamity that befell this island, and is now just gone mad, and she's in shock, and she actually accidentally stabs one, but they say, it's Rita, you know, don't, please, we'll, you know, of course.
Sounds very, very Italian, yeah. With a mysterious blind woman, you're just a la The Beyond or something, or just some blind woman is there just to add a little air of corniness, campiness, mystery, weirdness. It's just great.
Now, what I love, again, like, I mean, that's just happening, right? But, of course, she pops out of this barrel of blood that she's been hiding in for God knows how long, and right away, Julie just grabs her, it's going to be okay, everything will be okay. It's not okay, it's not fucking okay. How can everything be okay when you're on this deserted island? Mm. You've already seen a corpse that's been gnawed on, you know, this blind girl is supposed to be in your charge, supposed to look after, just pops out of
this barrel safe,
covered in blood, you know, like, it's not okay.
It's never okay.
It's not okay. And that was said so many times after, like, bad things happened. Mm. It's okay. Okay, anyway, I'm just going to say, for 50 minutes straight, this movie is nothing but wandering, wandering, wandering. I mean, Glenn or Glenda might have had 14 minutes of stock footage, but this movie has at least 45, 50 minutes of just wandering. People doing stupid things. One of the things I failed to mention is that they get to this island by boat, right? One of the women, Maggie, stays on the boat because she's very pregnant, and they figured that she wouldn't be able to traipse through this island. She's on the boat with a sailor. At one point, we see her being attacked. The sailor's head gets lopped off. She pulls out of the waters, whatever, and she's dragged away. So the tourists that are on the island, they see that the boat is no longer docked, and it's, you know, kind of farther away from the shore. Oh, let's see how Maggie's doing. Oh, I'm sure she's fine. We'll check around in the morning. And in the morning, it's like, oh, well, now we must see Maggie. Like, now you have the urgency? What the fuck? Anyway.
Well, I didn't realize it was a matter of degrees rather than in kind. Very pregnant. Yeah. I guess, no. Fair enough. Yeah, like, she was a well-advanced. Her belly was, yeah. I just
well, anyway, that no, but that honestly, that comes into play because, yeah, in the last 20 minutes of the movie, this thing just goes into overdrive. It's fucking incredible. Because we then meet the Anthrophagus, okay? And he just basically looks like a guy, a balding guy with, like, just really poorly applied liquid latex, okay? But he looks pretty fucking rotted, and he just went fucking apeshit and just started eating everybody in this island. That's why the island's deserted. And at one point, Maggie, the pregnant lady, who was dragged onto the island, was dragged into this crypt with all these human remains and bones and so on. And the two men find her, and then they're attacked by the Anthrophagus, right? Now, here comes a scene that everybody, you know, who's seen this movie will say that you did cite this scene, okay? The Anthrophagus, he attacks the man, he stabs Arnie, who's Maggie's husband, chokes her to death, reaches into her
uterus,
pulls out her baby, her fetus,
wow,
and eats it.
Jeez.
Okay, so that was incredible. After that, it's just, you know, trying to escape this crazy cannibal who's chasing throughout the village, and there's some incredible set pieces, some really gory stuff. You're getting, you know, heads being pulled through roofs, and, you know, pokers into the neck, and people getting hacked up with pickaxes, and one of my favorite scenes in the movie is at the very end, because, I mean, the Anthrophagus is pretty much unstoppable. They can't kill him. He keeps coming, keeps coming, keeps coming. Finally, when you think that he's going to get Rita and Julie, and that's the end of that, Arnie comes up from nowhere. You think he's dead, right? Takes a pickaxe, whacks the guy in the stomach, the Anthrophagus, his guts spill out, right? Anthrophagus grabs his guts, picks it up, and starts eating his own guts before he expires.
Wow.
That's fucking incredible. Cannibal eating himself, okay? So, this movie is boring as fuck, okay? For, I would say, 50, 60 minutes. The last 20 minutes, I mean, you got the eating of a fetus, which in actuality was just a rabbit that they skinned.
Hmm. Well, in the long story tradition of abusing animals in this horrible genre, well, and that seems positively benign compared to the other animal abuse we've seen. So just did one rabbit. I think that's, you know.
No, honestly, this movie was not as disgusting as, you know, a lot of the other cannibal films. I also rented Beyond the Darkness, another D'Amato movie, which was a little bit more extreme in its gore. What this movie had going for it was an hour of sheer tedious boredom with stupid people making stupid decisions, but you sort of needed that in order to get to the climax. And once this thing got going in the last 20 or so minutes, it was a good...
Well, I guess that one would argue any horror worth its salt needs to lay the foundation somehow. So it's just a question. Like, we've never made a film ourselves. We've produced them. Mm-hmm. There's a fine line between how long you're going to draw out the, you know, the sort of the preamble, the character development before your creature is introduced. And I guess we'll find out if we ever make one.
Yeah, there was it. I mean, he was, you know, at one point the anthropophagus was locked in a room with Rita, and then all of a sudden one of the men gets in there and he takes a little chomp out of his neck. So you get these little flashes of the anthropophagus, but the real sustained carnage didn't happen until the end. Now, I would say if you rent this movie and just fast forward to the last 20, 30 minutes, you're doing yourself a disfavor. You need to earn that.
And then there's a payoff, exactly. So it makes it all worthwhile.
Now, I got a question for you, okay? Mm. Because, like I said, I've been going through this, you know, this real brutal, nasty horror streak, and I've been renting a lot of these movies. And these nasties, they're all Italian, okay? You're Italian.
Yeah, right? My father, for sure.
Yeah. Now, these were released in the late 70s, early 80s. This is when the Italian horror boom was just going on. And, of course, you had your Argentos and your Folkis, and they were making, like, good movies, right? But then you had your D'Amatos and your Diodatos and your Lenzis and Stilvatis and what have you, right? Now, these movies did well in the States, but they played in grindhouse cinemas. They played in 42nd Street, right? Because that's where they belong. But these were huge in
mainstream successes in Italy.
I'm thinking to myself, like, did Nonna and, was it Nonna and Nono?
Nonno.
Like, did they get dressed up in, like, you know, their Sunday best and, like, have a sip of Campari, you know?
Yeah,
and go out to, like, these gorgeous cinemas and watch Anthropophagus or Cannibal Holocaust? Like, were these, I don't get it. Like, I can't.
I can only speculate, but it's, there's a special kind of, I hope we're not offending our Italian listeners here, but there's a special kind of sort of xenophobia and cultural chauvinism in Italy. Mm-hmm. And I could see how these two things would factor into something. So you're in Cannibal Holocaust, they're showing an other. They're showing an exotic locale that is completely foreign to them. And yeah, at the same time, they have this sort of, I would call it a benign kind of xenophobia, where they kind of dislike everyone, because at least in southern Italy, it's a place that's been conquered so many times, mm-hmm. in various times over history, by the Normans, by the Arabs, by everybody. So they have an extreme distrust of outsiders.
Yes.
So, geez, but I don't want to... But also, I would argue that this would be a hit in the same way that Canadian films are more popular here.
Barely,
because they're so few and far between that people go to see them because they want to see themselves
but that
related
screen. I'm going to rebut that because, I mean, huge, and they're turning out these movies, but what I'm saying is, like, I mean, you know, instead of seeing, like, a Fellini film...
Yeah, they do have their own ingrained culture, but they're still influenced overwhelmingly by American imports, I have no answer for that.
The thought that, like, Zia and Zio, you know, like I said, would get dressed up in their suits, and, you know, because the Italians, they do it up,
They do it up,
you know, they go and have a nice meal, and then they go, we're going to go see Anthropophagus, and oh, what a great picture that was. whereas back in New York City, you got these fucking grindhouse, hobos and, like, just these real, like, crackheads and...
when you wade into the debate about what makes something popular culturally, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to explain away pantomime in the UK theater tradition of this over-the-top, campy, call-and-response with the audience, sort of effeminate kind of style of theater that is just... unique to them, and just
the
why
Kabuki theater in
Japan,
but it's just like I said, like before, like I mean,
or like, you know, speaking of Phagus, or Phagus, I don't know how to pronounce it, but you know, certain aspects of Teutonic porn that we won't get into
that have a certain
predilection. I don't want to know.
It's
a difficult debate to wade into. But
until I start talking about the filmography of Jörg Butgerit, Drams, your Necromantics, etc. You know, the Germans are another
beast entirely.
But I mean, it just—I don't know, man. Like I said before, like the fact that this Italian horror industry was so booming. And yes, they did do well in the international market, but these did not play in your mainstream cinemas.
No.
They played in grindhouses, whereas in Italy and maybe other parts of Europe, they're actually playing, like, you know, in one... multiplex, I don't know if they had multiplex back then, it was single screen cinemas, but I mean, you know, one theater be playing, like, you know, Fellini's AmeriCorps, or AmeriCorps, yeah. And the other one would have, you know, Cannibal Ferox. It's just, yeah. it's insane. But you know what? These films, God bless the Italians. I was actually thinking to myself, if not for the Italians, I would not be the horror fan I am today. Because when I got into horror, I, you know, obviously start out with, you know, your domestics, your Jasons, your Mike Myers, your...
Yeah, and the Canadian ones we didn't know were Canadian at the time, because we're in the unfortunate position of having our domestic locales standing in as American ones, mm-hmm. constantly. And that's the case with BC standing in as Washington State, Toronto standing in for Seattle, for New York City, for Washington. So we never see ourselves represented as ourselves.
Oh, but what I was saying is that those domestics, I mean, if I would have just stuck with those, mm-hmm. they would have eventually gone boring, right? But then I started doing some of my research, and I started hearing about your Argentos, your Fulcis, and then I started, like, actually going out there and watching these movies, and all of a sudden seeing something I've never seen in my entire life. Like, the first Argento movie I saw was Tenebrae, and I was just, like, blown away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then Tenebrae is so awesome because, and to go on a tangent here, but how Rome, and we're talking about Fellini, and how the city is depicted traditionally, and just how magnificent it is, and the United Nations, you know, UNESCO heritage sites it has, there's the... No, the Spanish Steps, the Colosseum, you could go on and on with the Vatican and everything that's there. But in Tenebrae, they avoid that and they focus predominantly on the modern architecture of Rome. So it's this glimpse into the eternal city that you never see. And it could have been, like, I could have mistaken it for, like, Stockholm with some of the, like, apart from, well, I guess the palm trees or whatnot. But the modern architecture could have been Berlin. It was an amazing thing. Yeah. And I had the same experience with Italian film. I didn't know it at the time, but just Suspiria.
Yeah,
well, you just go, whoa, what is this?
And after Tenebrae came Suspiria, and after that came Fulci Zombie and House by the Cemetery, and then Bava, and then I'm starting to research other you know, horrors from other parts of the world, like Spain and the Blind Dead series, and even Mexico, and on and on and on. That's what made me into a horror fan. Really, it was international horror. So,
and then that's a great segue here because, you know, for our international listeners, the crap of the week I'm going to talk about are two, outdoors-themed films. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge, huge fan of Deliverance. Burt Reynolds as Lewis, the alpha male leader of this group of weekend warrior dilettantes who go into the Georgia bush, and they go out on some sort of male bonding excursion, and they end up set upon by
Ned Beatty.
Yeah, poor Ned Beatty. And they're set upon by a bunch of inbred exploitation stereotypes in the middle of this gorge. So I love the James Dickey novel. He was a great writer. Deliverance, I love. So one of the movies I saw this week was called Rituals, which is a Canadian, it's almost, you know, you're almost giving it short shrift by calling it a Canadian Deliverance, but for all intents and purposes, it's a Canadian Deliverance. Instead of the four guys from different backgrounds who, you know, drop their canoes into this Georgia gorge, these guys are, I guess, dropped by plane into remote Ontario wilderness. I think it's called a seaplane. I don't know what different countries have different terms. It's a plane that can land on water.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, all these guys are taking the Hippocratic Oath.
Yes, this is a unique kind of, and you know, this sort of lends itself to a sort of Canadian aloof sensibility cinematically. These guys are not every man you can root for, in the way that every one of the Deliverance guys, you could say, oh, he's a family man, he's a, one guy's in finance, the other guy's like a macho guy, like they are sort of archetypes of all different kinds of men. These guys are all kind of pompous assholes, and they're all different specialties in the medical field, and they go in there and they're dropped off for a fishing trip in the bush, and these guys, one of them's a neurologist, another's a pediatrician, and so they're going on a fishing expedition, and they're traipsing through the northern Ontario bush, miles from anywhere, and they are set upon by a mysterious figure that's not shown until the very last frame, which differentiates it from your Deliverance. It's initially their boots are stolen, which is kind of funny, and it's almost like a frat prank where these guys are in the woods. It's like, ha ha, we've got your footwear. But this is serious business. If you're in the woods, imagine they're on a 5-day canoeing, camping, fishing excursion, and you don't have proper footwear. Mm-hmm. These guys think it's a serious enough condition that they're in that they should really go and seek help rather than sit around for 5 days without, you know, the proper footwear. So the one guy decides to go hike upriver and find a dam, which they have on their map, and this says, it's not run by itself. That's the justification for going to a giant hydroelectric project. They say that presumably that there's a bunch of workers there and then we can get help. So the one guy leaves. His remaining compatriots, they are awoken by a deer carcass, and this thing is swinging to and fro with a snake wrapped around it, a la the Asclepius, I forget what it is, Greek antiquity. The snake symbolizes regeneration and rebirth, and it's taken on a sort of...
Well, in the medical profession, they use that.
Yeah, in the medical profession, it's taken on this symbol as you know, and they realize soon that they're being stalked in the bush. And unlike Deliverance, where they have Lewis, who's the, you know, Burt Reynolds used to be a football player in college. He's a big ass-kicking, muscle-bound guy.
Sort of.
And, well, he was, like, in Deliverance, he was a badass.
In Deliverance, he was a fucking badass. I bought him.
Yeah.
Hook, line, and sinker.
And the other guys were sort of, like, soft city guys.
But then when I'm watching, like, you know, Smokey the Bandit, Camel
Ride, he let himself go a little bit.
You know, sort of like, you know, with a stupid mustache and looking at the camera. And he just became Burt Reynolds.
So for sure.
Deliverance was the only movie where I actually saw him, and maybe Boogie Nights, where he actually acted. He actually played a role.
For
in
sure.
Every other movie, it was just Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, this is true.
Character.
Yeah.
But anyhow.
Yeah, and in this one, unlike that, there's no alpha male to lead the charge, because these are all eggheads. These are all guys who spent 7 years of their life in university.
Hal Holbrook was one of them?
Yeah, I was going to say, Hal Holbrook is one of the principals. He's best known for All the President's Men, which, if I'm not mistaken, was Oscar nominated and came out, I think, within a year or two of this thing. So they managed to snag him as, you know, on the upswing of his career. And again, a super low budget film. We've talked in the past about Canadian tax shelter films. So this thing was made because they offered tax credits, so you could get a write off to make this thing. And for better or for worse, we had lots of amazing films that came out during this era.
This era
The Brood,
incredible.
Black Christmas, but a lot of people just made schlock that they could sort of take the money and run.
Right.
A la, like, the Mel Brooks movie there. Springtime for Hitler.
The Producers.
The Producers, yeah. So a lot of that went on where they just said, okay, we got a bunch of investors, we can just fuck off. Mm-hmm. But this thing is really amazing and really harrowing, and it should be mentioned in the same breath as Deliverance.
Now, wasn't there, from what I recall, didn't the killer also leave sort of, like, Blair Witchy and, like, totemic sort of things all around to kind of psych them out, or am I mistaken? Little handiwork, arts and crafts type stuff, or
I can't recall that apart from the snake, but
okay,
they definitely knew they were being hunted, and they again didn't have any sort of alpha male leader.
Yeah,
they were all just city guys who had medical practices, and they had to make do. And that's what's so great about horror is ordinary people put in extraordinary circumstances.
Indeed,
and so these guys are, but they're, as I said, incredibly aloof, snotty, and the medical profession is rife with this, in my opinion. There's a little bit of a god complex
elitism,
that doctors have, and elitism, and these guys are not sympathetic at all.
Mm-hmm.
But Hal Holbrook's wonderful. I think he's Harry in the lead, and these guys have to make it out of this predicament. This thing was shot 10 hours north of here in a town called Sault Ste. Marie, which is near the Michigan border in upper Michigan. And it's really very remote. There's nothing for miles and miles. It's just dense bush and lakes. And it's incredibly evocative, beautiful place to set a film. It was an amazing film.
Yeah, no, as far as I'm concerned, Rituals is up there with, like, for example, Curtains is one of the most criminally underseen Canadian horror films coming out of the tax shelter era. It's absolutely amazing. I mean, like, as you were saying before, when it comes to tax shelter, yeah, a lot of crap was made, but there was so much great stuff that came out. For example, George C. Scott's The Changeling, right? And the early Cronenberg movies, and Prom Night, and this one.
Yeah, you know? My Bloody Valentine. It's just, yeah. Well, speaking of pickaxe murders, as you mentioned, Anthropophagus.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
But just the really, really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then we've, in our top movies of 2015, a number of Canadian films were lauded, so we're seeing a real renaissance in Canadian film. And
Canadian
this,
genre film, yeah, mm-hmm. It's happening. It's a really cool time in Canada right now. There's some really amazing stuff coming out. So
this is one of the rare instances where we have two laudable, commendable crap of the week films. This is almost unheard of. Generally, we'll find some misbegotten Steven Seagal shot in British Columbia, you know, direct to DVD kind of piece of schlock. But these are two films well worth checking out. Yeah, this one I would give 3.75, and the last one I'll talk about very briefly. Okay. It was done by Justin McConnell. He has another Lost in the Woods kind of zombie film called The Collapsed, which was highly regarded in local horror circles and beyond. Rue Morgue, Fangoria, they gave it, bestowed upon it a lot of acclaim. Another post-apocalyptic film in which there's a family that you're invested in, a family of four with a brother and a sister and an alpha male patriarch and his wife, and they have to make do in this land where they're being attacked, in this where there's lawlessness abounds, and they have to make it to Dover's Bend, which is, I believe, the town where they can presumably find a safe haven. In every post-apocalyptic movie, you have to have a quest, you have to find a place where you'll be safe. This thing, I'm not going to say too much about it, but it turns genre conventions on its ear in that it plays with who you think is a hero and who isn't. And again, spoiler alert, I don't want to get too much into it, but what is deceptively on the surface a traditional survivalist movie with, I forget the genesis of it, it might have been a plague or something where a lot of the population is wiped out, family of four trying to make do in the woods, trying to make their way on modest provisions. They rob a corner store, a convenience store, and they take refuge in the woods in a cabin. Again, really neat film. You can't say anything more about it because you would give away its denouement, but real interesting twists. And
the thing that Justin McConnell did is he made a really awesome documentary a few years back called Skull World, which it's one of those you sort of have to see at documentaries. I mean,
what's the premise?
Let's just say it's all about a man who I've actually met a couple times now. He's kind of like a buddy of mine named Skullman, and that's all I'm going to say. He's such a crazy, uniquely Canadian figure. I don't want to say he's nuts because he is, but he's like a good type of nuts. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But you gotta it's just a fascinating documentary, Skull World. I recommend people seek that one out as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Skull World, great.
The Collapsed. Rituals, Anthropophagus.
Well, Anthropophagus with some caveats in the sense that it is really boring up until the end. But I would give Anthropophagus a solid, again, I'm going to have to go with the quarters that I'm not pleased about.
3.25?
No, I was going to say 2.75 because it would have been 3 stars if it was just a little bit more riveting in the beginning. But, still worth seeing, especially if you really, if you're a gore hound. I mean, it's the last 20 or so minutes is unbelievable. And
I was trying to compare Rituals to Deliverance, and it's hard to, when you revisit Deliverance, because it's taken on a life of its own pop culturally. you know, squeal like a pig, and you know, the banjo scene. It's just, you can't, if you've never seen Deliverance, it's impossible to almost objectively look at it, because you feel like you've seen it before.
Yeah.
Rituals, there were times where I thought it was, in fact, more evocative and more engaging and horrific than Deliverance, but I can't put it in the same, because it just doesn't have the same, it's maybe it's the budget, it's just not as well shot. Like, Deliverance is a beautiful movie in a way that, you know, the whatever 40-50 grand that Rituals cost to make, it just, they couldn't replicate some of these iconic shots.
I will say that, in a sense, yes, I mean, the best, the elevator pitch for Rituals would be like the Canadian Deliverance. However, in a sense, it's almost doing a disservice, because it stands on its own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. It's not a ripoff, you know what I mean?
No.
Of Deliverance. It's its own unique beast, and it's a really compelling movie.
Yeah, because they don't, they foreshadow it, but they don't disclose the identity of the killer as quickly as they do in Deliverance, so you're left guessing to the very end. So that's why I would give that 3.5.
And those that have stayed away from Deliverance because they just can't
take Ned Beatty getting in the ass,
Ned Beatty squealing like a pig. There's none of that in this one. So don't you?
Yeah, and I was thinking culturally too. There's just, you couldn't set a film in Canada with Canadians and really have, because we don't have enough of a cultural sensibility to replicate a Hicksploitation film, because Hicksploitation, as seen predominantly in, well, you can go back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there, the backwoods, hell, the recent example, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, we don't have
a great spoof on,
have like a mountain men bootlegging inbred hillbilly stereotypes where we can turn to in a particular region where we can say, okay, those guys like in the mountains in Tennessee. We don't have a region
like the Appalachians.
Like the Appalachians, where again the backwoods bootlegging guys with missing teeth and all that. It's a stereotype. Like, if you know, for our American listeners, I've been to Tennessee and Kentucky, very beautiful states, and this stereotype does not really hold true, or Virginia. If there are pockets of this, but it's flagrantly, blatantly enhanced and exaggerated for the purposes of film. But in Canada, we don't really have this.
Although we do have, I mean, we have the mine workers and the fishers of Nova Scotia. We've got the denizens of Newfoundland, who, you know, have a pejorative term which I'm not going to use.
Yeah.
I guess they're like the closest thing. We have the lumberjack stereotype.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
We call them hosers. We call them newfies, you know. But the reality is, they've never been amplified, you know, on screen as like these complete stereotypes. You want to talk about, like, you know, Bob and Doug McKenzie on CTV as far as being like a real Canadian stereotype, but they weren't like salted.
And they're fairly benign. Yeah, like the mine workers in My Bloody Valentine are just a bunch of like blue collar union fun loving guys who hang out in the bar every Friday night. So we don't really have that. Although maybe it's gonna give us an idea for a lumberjack horror.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, maybe we're just trying to find our cinematic identity here in Canada, and so far it's been body horror, courtesy of Mr. Cronenberg, and a sort of aloof, austere, cold, kind of withdrawn, distant kind of persona, and that's I don't know if we'll be able to shake that.
Yeah. Although, as you said earlier, there has been a real renaissance in Canadian filmmaking, genre filmmaking. We've talked to a lot of young Canadian filmmakers on our podcast. We've had the pleasure of interviewing them, meeting them. One of them could very well be the next David Cronenberg. So
for
there's,
sure.
There's some really good stuff happening. So I guess the takeaway is that if you want a little bit of Italian nastiness, Anthrophagus, you know, Joe D'Amato, the man of 1,000 aliases, including my favorite, yet again, I have to repeat it, Clara Leeson.
I like Yip.
and Rituals is a fucking incredible movie. So.
Yeah, for sure, and The Collapsed as well. The survivalist, twin Canadian survivalist horrors. Check out all of them for sure. And we're going to revisit this segment, Crap of the Week, and if you have any suggestions for any sort of underseen, overlooked, Jim, we'd want to check out, shoot us an email, really awful movies.
Or some absolute turds. We love those as well. So
reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com and check out our website for reviews, interviews, and giveaways, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're part of the Crypt TV family. Awful_movies on Twitter. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.